Hi. Okay, well, this is a real special pleasure for me. And I'm introducing my friend and fellow Zen traveler and teacher, Henry Shukman, who is the Roshi here in the Mountain Cloud Zendo in Santa Fe. And I really want to say it's really a special pleasure to spend this time with you. And we thought that, as we had discussed before we began to record, that it might be interesting for those who listen to us to have a little bit of sense of your voyage. What has taken you to where you are now, the insights, the pivotal insights that you've had? Because as I hope to bring out in this interview, I do feel that you have a very special set of insights to contribute to the world, which I hope to be a part in helping. And so, but clearly this didn't come out of spontaneous combustion, right, as part of a life journey. And are there some important events that have taken you to where you are today and are potentiating where you may take this, your own insights and teaching, Henry?
Oh, thank you for asking, and thank you so much for being willing to spend this time with me and making time to be with me in this way. It's lovely. I'm just very, very happy. Okay, so let's see. Yes, I had... I think there's sort of key people, you know, in my journey that precipitated things for me. Like, when I was a kid, I suffered from very bad eczema from a very young age. Oh. And it was really sort of almost the main thing in my life that I was fending, trying to cope with. And a difficult family background as well, with a painful parental divorce and a remarriage between my dad and my mum's first cousin that was very difficult for everybody, and so on. And then I met a priest, actually, a Colombian priest. I lived in Oxford, England, and he was traveling through, and I was probably 12 years old, and this guy was a liberation theologian. He wasn't anything like any kind of priest I'd met before. He was nothing like I thought priests were like. I wasn't interested in priests. I didn't like the church. I didn't want to go near it, you know, even at that early age.
He could have been part of the eczema, as far as you were concerned.
Exactly. I was a rebel, you know, and I sort of didn't like most things. I had a very strong sense of right and wrong, and almost everything was in the wrong camp, as far as I was concerned. But this priest came along who had the most expansive view. He had just been training in a radical Marxist seminary, and all he wanted to do was help the disempowered and underprivileged people. And he talked about people in the Himalayas who meditated and can make themselves die and then come back to life. And about shamans in his own country, in Colombia, who could talk with jaguar and deer. And he talked about kids who, street kids, who actually organized themselves and ran bakeries and taxi services. And I mean, his whole sense of what human beings were capable of and what they could do together and what they could do in their environment was so different from anything I'd ever tasted before that it was really, really revelatory. And he also helped me sort of disengage from the family tangle that I was very much caught up in a brilliant way. And somehow he sowed a seed. And years later, I was a young poet. That was my thing. You know, I was fascinated by poetry from quite an early age. I had a couple of good friends, one in particular who was a great poet. We read a lot, we wrote a lot. And when I was young, actually 18, I had a gap year after school before I went to college. And through that very priest, my father, who was an academic in Oxford, managed to arrange for me to go and work in South America. And so I worked for a few months, and then I traveled. And in the course of the travel, I found myself on a beach one afternoon, and I was writing a book about it. You know, crazy hubris, you know, age of 19 by then, to think I could write a book. But I did, and then one day I thought I'd finished the book and I was feeling really good, and I was on a beach watching the sun go down, basically, and all alone. Just happened to be a remote, small beach, nobody around. And as I was watching the sun go down and reflecting on the sea, I had a mystical experience, I suppose, where all of a sudden, what I was looking at was simply not separate from me. It was one dream, one reality, one mind, one unbelievable body, almost, that just included everything. And it was all one. And the fact that it was all one was utterly marvelous, because it meant that my sense of separateness was gone. And I'd always been troubled by a deep sense of not belonging. And I thought it was kind of cultural, because we were Jewish or part Jewish in England, which was subtly anti-Semitic. I mean, not overtly, but it was. And I always felt we didn't really belong. But actually, our mum wasn't Jewish. So we didn't really belong in the Jewish tribe, according to some
Jews. Didn't belong anywhere.
Not really. Mm. You know, and so this sense suddenly of being, not just belonging, but actually being just made of the same fabric as the whole cosmos. I mean, it was, of course, it was mind-blowing, but it was so healing. It was like an, I felt like a great love had shown me that I was part of it. And I felt this sort of welling up of a real flowing of love, just flowing up like a spring, like a gushing fountain that just didn't stop. You know, it was as if I discovered some other aspect of what a human being was made for, which was just to be a kind of vessel for this love to keep welling up in. And I mean, I've been brought up very traditional, classical education and strict and, you know, very, very narrow, categorized, confined sort of worldview that was basically thoroughly empiricist, thoroughly logical, thoroughly positivist, thoroughly rational.
Your father was a professor at Oxford?
Yeah.
Of what?
And my mum.
Well, both parents.
My dad, Russian history. Uh-huh. My mum, Russian literature.
I see.
I mean, they are fascinating people, actually. Mm. But, you know, the prevailing worldview was as rationalist as it could be, you know. And it wasn't really...
Can I just interrupt you?
Yeah.
The experience you're describing at 19, was it as distinctly limbed, distinctly powerful as you are describing it now, as you recall? Or do you think you're reading in a lot of the voyage and all the skill and experience you've had? Yeah. Does it stand as distinctively as you describe now as it happened then?
Yes, yes. Yes, it was really very mind blowing.
So without any religious, without any spiritual practice or training, this came full blown,
yes,
fully formed.
Yes, it did. And I remember, I mean, I wrote about it soon after, and I remember writing, you know, that I felt my nose was pressing against the end of the universe.
Wow, what an image!
And it was like it all turned to floating sparks, and wow. And it was, everything was here. There was no distance, and it was all this evanescent, effervescent.
But it was a gift.
It was a gift.
I mean, it didn't come from training,
from years
of sitting on a pillow and struggling to break through.
No, but that's only the beginning. Because then I went home and I had basically a nervous breakdown.
Nice, a good
A few weeks later. Where suddenly all the unfelt, repressed sorrows and frustrations and anguishes of my childhood, I was so open that when I got home,
right,
I had no defences.
Wow.
And they all just welled up and I couldn't cope with it.
Wow.
I collapsed. I really did. And it took me years. There was so much shame in the collapse that it took me years to start seeking help. Really years. I mean, 6, 7 years. And the way the help came...
I mean, you contained it within yourself. You struggled.
Oh, I couldn't really...
You suffered.
I just suffered horribly. I was a wreck. I mean, I managed to sort of limp through life.
Wow.
I dragged myself through. I went to university and I got through somehow. And I was really broken and I knew it, but I just didn't know what to do about it. And I didn't want to ask anybody because I was so ashamed at being no longer the healed human being I felt I'd become. I had no means at that age. I hadn't learned how to be vulnerable. I didn't know how to be. I knew somehow I'd managed to sort of open in that way, but I couldn't be vulnerable.
Well, this is of course, this is a very deep, deep, moving set of observations and questions you raise, because surely, and I'm sure that we can explore it, hopefully, that this extraordinary experience of deep belonging, that you and the universe are one, has to be able to be ported into the world, the phenomenal world in which we live.
Well, I couldn't agree more, but it took me a long time to be able to do that. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what happened. When I came home a few weeks later, for some reason, it was my dad who picked me up off the bus and took me to his house, and I got in the bath to have a bath. And in the bath, I felt I could hear voices downstairs, and the pipes whistling and rumbling in a certain way. And suddenly it sort of all came back to me. The pain of being in this divided household and so many unspoken bitterness and rancor and betrayal, and I felt it all as a kid but repressed it, and now I just couldn't repress it, and I really felt overwhelmed, and that I couldn't contain any of it. I didn't have at that point, I just felt I felt I was losing what I'd become, what I'd discovered, what I'd become. Awesome. I just lost it. And, I mean, looking back, I can frame what was really going on. But at the time, all I sort of thought I knew was I was losing what I'd found, and that instead I was back in hell. And hell wouldn't let me out again. It had done it once. It was never going to make the same mistake again. And so I just went down a vortex into despair. And yeah, it was... I learned over the next couple of years, I learned to function in spite of it. But not... not with any kind of fullness of being at all. You know, it was just a limping along.
But you know, in Lear,
yeah,
there's a wonderful line that says, "This is not the worst, so long as we can say this is the worst." So something must have happened that you hit bottom, but then you did survive, and you started to come out. I call this the adversity spiraling waveform. And somehow or other, you had something, there was a voice, there was muscle tone, there was a capacity that enabled you to move through the darkness.
Eventually.
What was it that happened. I mean, apart from just suffering.
I think partly it was actually walking.
Walking?
Yeah, I went on a long walk across the land of England.
Wow.
Into Wales.
Like a pilgrimage of sorts.
Yeah, but I didn't frame it that way. I just felt, I can't stay here any longer. And I very impulsively stuffed a sleeping bag in a backpack, unprepared, you know, wearing sandals, actually, and walked out the door and bought matches, bought a newspaper, sausages and tea, and a saucepan that I'd grabbed, I guess, as well, and went and spent the next 6 weeks walking. It was one summer. And by the end of that, or in the course of that, I started to reconnect with the landscape that I'd actually connected with as a kid, as a young teen. I slept out a lot as a young teen. And so woods, copses, hills, valleys.
So it was the land, you were connecting to the land.
Yes, it was starting to feel my body, my feet.
That's wonderful.
Walking through the land. It was, and poems started to come again. And I started to sort of remember, I think that's the right word.
It is exactly the right word, because the origins of it has to remember, right? You reconnected to these fundamental structures.
Yes. And then I started meditating. I was very lucky. A good friend of mine meditated, and he persuaded me. And I did, and it was the right thing, because I could then, it provided a space, a kind of context in which emotions could show themselves. And over time, I learned to let them be there and to experience them, and not to try to, not to freak out when an emotion came. And then that opened up the door to doing some therapy at last, which I desperately needed, really.
Let me just say this, because this may be a good point to pause. What is so, for me, very interesting is how you descended and you went deeply into the darkness, and that you could have died at many different levels, but you didn't. And you reemerged, and you what seemed to be a primary means was a reconnecting to the earth, to the Mother Earth.
Yes.
And that was deeply nourishing for you. So before we go to the next part and take a pause here, was there any, and I'm sure there were many, because we can't review your entire life, but was there another, any other pivotal experience that you would say that took you to a significant other level? Or should we pause at this point? This is the foundation.
No, not at all. This was just the beginning.
This was just the beginning.
This was an opener. And then once I started training in Zen, I had a series of much, much deeper experiences. And I could go catalogue them or whatever, no need. But I'll say the most important one was just an absolute dropping away of everything. No me, no world, everything gone. No, not even a witness.
Not even a witness.
That was the thing that really changed everything.
Was it in Europe, in England? Or?
It was while I was doing it happened to be, yes. I've had a teacher for years in England and a teacher here in New Mexico also for even more years. And now study with a Japanese abbot who you know, Yamada Ryoan Roshi. But actually, this particular moment was with the English teacher on a retreat. The last night of the retreat, I sat up, not actually all night, but most of the night. And something happened. I mean, just, it was interesting, actually, because what happened was something that had happened before, which was just really, really clearly seeing that in the middle of all experience, where I thought I was, it was just space. Just empty space. And then the next morning I went to talk to the teacher about it, you know, and I was lovely, but I had had something, it wasn't totally unfamiliar to me, that. It was a little different complexion and angle on it. But as I was telling him, then it happened.
Wow.
That everything really, it was just like a...
Thunderbolt.
It was like a Paleolithic axe smashed on the top of my head. And I disintegrated, and so did everything.
Wow.
There was no witness. I mean, I'd had experiences before, the world disappearing, nothing there. And still there's an awareness seeing that. This was different. It was like truly annihilated. And I think that's the key thing that Zen transmits and conveys, and that's the core. I know that it's at least the lineage I'm in sees itself as trying to share that, because it's from that that all the wonder springs.
Wow.
And so you see, the love gets so deep because it's not like that first experience where sort of somehow it was still in me.
Right.
It's not. It's much, much more profound than that. It's everything now, this minute, is welling up.
Yeah.
In this,
let's pause, because I think I think if we could end on that Paleolithic axe annihilating you, which most listeners would think, well, that doesn't sound like a very pleasant thing to have happen, and yet, as you said, from there comes something even more extraordinary, or at least as extraordinary. Let's pause, because the next section, I want to start exploring the role of heart and love.